Order the House Committee on Education Subcommittee on Higher Education for Wednesday, February 28th, 2007. I am a lonely representative at the moment, coming only by Mr. Olson, our very well-qualified committee administrator. We're getting some, my vice chair has shown up, very good. Apologies in advance. This is become an extremely hectic day all of a sudden, given a lot of negotiations that are happening. I will have to step out at 1:30 to participate in a brief negotiation and come back. And I'm going to propose that my community college president be put on when I leave, because I've heard enough from him, and I don't want to hear any more from him.
You're hoping he'd leave, right?
But I do want to thank you for being here. Getting some attention to community colleges was one of the main goals of this subcommittee. And we look forward to hearing you talk about your campuses and where you've been and where you're going. So with that, if I can ask John Turner from Blue Mountain Community College to start us off and educate me, please. And for the record, ladies and gentlemen, Representative Lim is excused. He is in Washington, D.C., I believe. He's out of town. Representative Greenlick will be joining us. Representative Clem will be joining us. Thank you.
Chair Buckley and Representative Kremel, for the record, I'm John Turner, president of Blue Mountain Community College, and I appreciate the opportunity to come tell you a little bit about my college. Blue Mountain Community College serves the northeasternmost six counties of Oregon. It's an area of about 18,000 square miles. It's larger than the states of Connecticut, Rhode Island, Delaware, put together Maryland, all of them combined. That's the area that I serve. Wow. If you want to put that in perspective, it's a low-income area, primarily agricultural. More than half of the students there come from low-income families, suffer some kind of disability, or are first-generation college students, because we have a fairly low level of higher education attainment out in eastern Oregon. We serve about 12,000 students in some form or fashion each year. That boils down to a little over 2,000 full-time equivalents. The college provides about $156 million in income when you take into account either past instruction or current instruction that's taken place at the college. It's explained by the presence of Blue Mountain College in that region. I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes about some of the reasons why the college is important to the region. Of course, it's a highly agricultural area, heavily dependent on diesel technology. And we used to have a diesel technology program, which due to budget cuts, we cut about 5 years ago. And I'm proud to say that with the aid of a community-based job training grant from the federal government, we're going to restart that program this fall.
Excellent.
So that is something that's a direct request from many of the citizens out there that need a program like that to keep their businesses vital. Probably no surprise that we have one of the largest agricultural community college programs in the state. We operate a 100-acre farm. Just last 2 weeks ago, we had about 100 Future Farmer of America and high school students on campus for a leadership conference. But this program is very expensive to run. Believe it or not, it costs more to operate that farm in this program than it does my nursing program. But it's vital to what we do out there in northeastern Oregon. In addition to the crop and animal science classes that we teach, we're experimenting with biodiesel, and we have a small program that we're running with the Port of Umatilla and the Pendleton Grain Growers Corporation to help small farmers, small businesses figure out how they might reduce their operating costs by moving to biodiesel in some form or fashion. We also have the Oregon State University Ag Extension Station located on our campus, and we have a close relationship with the OSU Agricultural Experimentation Station out there in the Pendleton area. We work a lot with small businesses and small farms. We have a small farm or farm business management program and a small business management program where these people that run these family-sized operations can get individual counseling and advice on how to make their individual businesses more prosperous. The college is currently leading a project in Umatilla County area on how we might attract more high-speed bandwidth. Believe it or not, we're not well served out there in rural eastern Oregon with high-speed bandwidth, and it's expensive. We need to figure out a way to bring more providers in there to provide that competition that will lower the price, and the college has taken the lead on that. Just as one example of how we're involved in the economic development of the region, employees of the college routinely serve on the regional workforce investment boards. We are on the Economic Development Council, the city development corporations, the apprenticeship committees. We have members of the college that are actively involved in all those types of things as part of our responsibility for helping with economic development. You can ask anybody out there who's in charge of trying to attract businesses to our region about how important it is to have some kind of higher education and training program out there. Because any company that wants to come in that has a need for skilled workers, that's the first question they ask. How am I going to get these workers trained, and do you have a college nearby? How about our students, though, that are not going to immediately enter the workforce? Of the students that transfer to the Oregon University system from BMCC, more than half of them transfer to Eastern Oregon University over in LeGrand. So it probably comes as no surprise to you that we've had a long-term and close relationship with Eastern Oregon University. In fact, we have programs right in Pendleton. I give free classroom space and free office space to EOU instructors so that they can teach four-year baccalaureate degrees in Pendleton. So students from the Pendleton area and Umatilla County don't have to make that trip in the wintertime over the mountains to LeGrand. I want to tell you a story about my class president, a fellow named Roman Oliveira. Roman is in his early 40s, has two kids in high school. Roman led a rough life. He was working as a meat packer. A low-income job, finally decided he wanted to go back and get his GED. So he did that at BMCC several years ago. Now he's about to finish his two-year AA degree, and he's enrolled through EOU right there in Pendleton on the weekends. He's going to be a teacher, and he's going to be a great one. And he's an example of the students that we serve every day over there. Recently, about 2 years ago, we formed a partnership with Eastern Oregon University and the city of Hermiston to try to address the growing population in the Hermiston area, which is the fastest growing city in Eastern Oregon and has attracted a lot of businesses. It's no surprise they have a large urban growth boundary, flat terrain, two major highways come together, two major ports there. They're growing. And our program from BMCC has been growing in the Hermiston area for a long time. So we needed to figure a way to offer lab sciences over in Hermiston. Eastern Oregon University wanted to figure out a way to offer the 300 and 400 level classes and offer some master's degree courses in both education and MBAs. So we've formed a coalition with the city of Hermiston. We've raised a couple of $1 million in matching funds, and we have money in the draft governor's budget in capital construction to build a facility over there, one building, where we can address the needs of the workforce and students who are place-bound and can't get over to Eastern Oregon University and complete their baccalaureate degree. I'd like to offer a couple of examples of how BMCC benefits the area that are kind of hard to place a dollar figure on. They're rather intangible. BMCC has the only covered swimming pool and public pool in Umatilla County. And if it wasn't for that, the Hermiston and Pendleton High Schools would not have a swim team program in the wintertime. We've got music and theater programs that partner with the community to offer cultural events that would not otherwise be possible out there in that area. Our nursing and dental graduates populate the hospitals and the dental offices so that highly skilled workers are available to provide adequate health care services for the region. I mentioned earlier about the FFA students, but we have students exploring career pathways up at the campus all the time in some sort of leadership examinations or challenges or orientations or something to try and help them figure out what they want to do after high school. As the president of BMCC, I'm very proud to walk the hallways and see how we're making a positive impact on our students every day. But I'll just tell you, it's precarious. We made some major budget cuts to people and programs in the 2001 to 2004 time frame. And we're going to, if the governor's budget passes, we'll balance our budget this year, but it's not as easy as you might think. And our pay raises have not kept pace with inflation. As an example, in the 2004 fiscal year, There was no cost of living allowance given to any employee at the college. In 2005, the cost of living allowance was 1%. And finally, this last year, as we began this fiscal year, we were able to offer 2.5% increase. So over a period of 3 years, a total of 3.5% in cost of living allowances. So I know that you recognize immediately that that's not even keeping pace with inflation, but that's what we have to do to keep our programs viable, and we're willing to do it. I would just like to ask you to support the $529 million budget put forth by the state education. We'll put it to good use out there.
Sounds like it, definitely. Representative Kremel, do you have any questions you'd like to ask Mr. Turner?
Actually, not at this point. Thank you very much for coming all the way over.
The only question I'd ask you is, it seems like you're doing a wonderful job with partnerships with Eastern Oregon and OSU. Besides money, which I will fight for as strongly as I can, is there anything the legislature could do to make your college stronger? Get out of your way?
I could probably think of a dozen very highly technical answers to that. I think that we would like to have a chance to get more some of the workforce investment dollars funneled into the community colleges.
That's a darn good answer right there.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you being here. Thanks for taking the time. Gretchen Schuett, did I come even close to that?
Pretty close.
Pretty close.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gretchen Schuette, president of Chemeketa Community College. As you know, I didn't have to come very far to be here today. Chemeketa serves the Mid-Willamette Valley, including all of Marion County, all of Polk County, most of Yamhill County, and even a little bit of Linn County, with more than 57,000 students taking one or more classes every year. We're directly serving one out of every six adults in our district. Sure. We conducted some research last summer, and that research indicated that overwhelmingly people in our community think Chemeketa is doing a good job. And I know that the presidents of the other community colleges could give you statistics similar to what I might give you, but what I bring you today is not so much the numbers, but the reasons why people think we're doing a good job. And I get to brag, this is my last year at the helm of Chemeketa Community College. I'm retiring in June, so I just so appreciate the opportunity, my last opportunity probably, to talk about how I believe Chemeketa is really on a course to honor the good work of so many over the years and to honor our traditions, but also on a course to meet the new challenges that will face Chemeketa Community College as our community's growing needs change. So to start with, three key commitments guide the work of Chemeketa Community College. First, we promise to actively encourage and support the achievement of literacy and college readiness for all in our community. And with this promise, I think Chemeketa embraces the mission of community colleges to provide what no other public institutions provide for adults, and that is the education that's needed to enter and successfully complete college programs. Secondly, we promise to open the door to college and to all levels of college for all members of our community, including those who traditionally have not had access to college. And our third promise is to create and sustain centers of excellence in technical training, workforce development, and business support. And we know that keeping this promise will enhance employment opportunities for people in our district. It will strengthen economic development for all the communities we serve, and we will have the employees and the businesses who are second to none and who are very competitive in a world economy. So these are the key promises that have come to guide Chemeketa and I believe will guide Chemeketa into the future. They drive all the plans of every department and program, and those plans drive the budget. So it would be easy for you to see, I think, how we are keeping our commitment to our community. It is through these promises that we really try to do the best for our students and for our community. And I want to give just one example. 3 years ago, the fourth largest bank holding company in America held secret meetings with Chemeketa and other economic development officials in our region to try to explore whether or not Salem was the place for them to come. And we played a key role in working with that company to see if they would have their customer service center here. And to a large degree, their decision hung on whether the Salem community would have the ability to provide the facilities, the training, and the people that they needed to make their decision. So we pulled out all the stops. We demonstrated. We had the expertise. We had the facilities. And we had the people that they needed. And Wachovia Corporation chose to come to Salem and build its business center. When they came, Chewbacca even displaced temporarily some of our own staff so that Wachovia could begin their training and get on the ground right away. And their executives praise Chewbacca as one of the jewels among Salem's other assets. And most importantly, Oregonians got jobs through that effort. Another example, a few years before that, the wine grape growers in the Willamette Valley came to us because they needed trained workers for their growing wine industry. And at that point, there was nowhere in the Pacific Northwest to learn how to grow grapes in our climate. At best, people could travel 500 miles to learn, but then they would have to come back and relearn everything to translate what they've been taught in California to what was needed to grow grapes and process grapes in Oregon. So Chemeketa again responded with a new program in vineyard management and winemaking. We got a federal grant. We raised funds from private donors and built the Northwest Viticulture Center. And today, grape growers and winemakers can draw the trained employees that they need to meet their workforce needs. So business, natural resources, Chemeketa is also a leader in advanced manufacturing technologies. Intel Corporation provides thousands of dollars in scholarships for our students every year in electronics and networking, and these students are often hired for work sometimes before graduation so that they can begin work right after graduation. So I've talked mostly about the professional technical aspect of Chemeketa's mission. As you know, and has already been referenced by President Turner, Chemeketa, like every other Oregon community college, provides transfer courses and programs for those who want to go to four-year colleges and universities. Portland State University, Linfield College, Eastern Oregon all have offices at Chemeketa Community College here in Salem. We have innovative partnerships with Western Oregon University, OIT, OHSU, Oregon State University, just to name a few. And we have the dual enrollment agreements that relate directly to the students' needs and make sure they can go from high school to community college to the university. And it is all about our students. For example, Bethany Schott, she graduated from Jervis High School last spring. She'd been an excellent student. She served as student body president. The Statesman Journal and our area colleges and universities, including the private universities, named her as one of our region's academic all-stars. She could have gone to almost any college in Oregon, but she chose Chemeketa Community College. She said, by attending Chemeketa, I can live at home and save money until I'm ready to transfer. And I call that a very savvy student, and we have thousands of those students. To help young students gain access to college in the first place and to keep one of our three strategic promises, we work with middle schoolers and we work with high schoolers to encourage them to finish high school and to go to college. And we offer numerous programs in partnership with our local high schools, including an early college high school program right on our Salem campus. And last year, high school students took college-level work at their schools throughout our district and earned college credits through a program that gave them a head start on post-secondary education and saved their families over $900,000. So pretty savvy families in that case. I would be less than candid if I didn't say that there was a cost to these improvements that I've been talking about. Meeting the community and student needs has really required significant investments on our part, and much of this occurred over the period of my presidency, which is also the period of the most difficult financial period for community colleges in the history of the state. Resources declined just when we needed resources to make these kinds of improvements. So we cut people and programs, but probably most troubling was the increase in tuition. Traditionally, the college had tuition increases of 3 to 4%. In this period, we've had increases of 10 to 15%. And yes, our staff and our board made these tough decisions. But faced with millions of dollars in gaps between revenues and expenditures, we didn't have much choice, and so we did. The legislature helped by reversing the trend in state funding and spending more money, giving more money to community colleges. It wasn't all we needed, but it certainly helped. And that respite has allowed us to take the risk this year to keep the same level of tuition. It is a risk, but we don't want students to continue to bear the entire burden of these improvements that I've been talking about. A year from now, when I come back and parachute back to see my colleagues and see what is going on, I hope that I will see the kinds of enrollment gains that we've begun to see and the turnaround that we've begun to see in fall and winter. And with your help in investing in community colleges, I believe that hope can be fulfilled. Chemeketa, my dear Chemeketa, it's a wonderful word. It means gathering place in the Kalapuya language. And we have been a gathering place, as President Turner also suggested. We're more than access to education. We're important in our communities. We bring people together throughout our district in communities large and small. For example, the enrollment at the Woodburn campus is growing tremendously. We have a new small facility on the Dallas High School campus itself, and these are just two of the bright gathering spots for the future with an investment in community colleges. I must mention work that has been close to my heart over the last 6 years, and that is the work of Chemeketa to develop a more welcoming environment for the diverse students in our community, and I'd be glad to come back and talk more about that. Quality is something that we are extremely proud of, and our instructional programs are recognized around the state and in some cases around the nation, and I'd be happy to talk at length about that another time. But let me just give three examples. Our early childhood education program is nationally accredited. Our fire science program is not only nationally accredited, but is one of 11 internationally accredited fire science programs. And our RN nursing program graduates are at the top of the state and the nation in their board scores. We have many students who can't get into our nursing program, however, and we have capacity issues with our health science facilities. We're working to increase that capacity. Again, the legislature can help by supporting capital construction at Oregon's community colleges. Among the list of community college projects is our Health Sciences Education Center. It will give us the capacity to increase in nursing education as well as pharmacology and dental hygiene. And the 15 projects are funded. A new campus with a focus on healthcare programs will be constructed directly across from the hospital in McMinnville, and that will also give greater access to rural Yamhill County if that is built. So health sciences, advanced manufacturing technology, lower division transfer courses, early child education, natural resources, many other programs, Chemeketa Community College and other colleges and universities must find room for thousands of additional students in these programs and others. It's a daunting task. It's one that will really require continued diligence. I believe we are all up to the task, and I thank you for your efforts.
Thank you very much. You know, we're not going to let you get away. I mean, you're retiring, but we're going to drag you back a few times before you retire. Thank you so much for your work, and we'll get you back for more questions.
Thank you
in the future. Thank you so much.
Can I ask a question?
We're a little bit pressed on time to get the full list through. So since Gretchen is local, I think we'll drag her back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. At this point, I'd like to invite Peter Angstadt forward from Rural Community College. We're skipping around on the roster a little bit because I want to hear from you, and I already know about him. So I'm going to hand the gavel to Representative Crummell, and I will be back as soon as humanly possible. President Angstadt, thank you for your...
Do you have a favor, or you would like me to go in?
After that, we can just get back on
okay, so I'll go Robert back Sullivan. Up to Dr. Sullivan. Okay.
Well,
it's just me and thee, so, you know, you go ahead. And
well, I'm glad to be here. For the record, my name is Peter Angstadt. I'm president of Rogue Community College, serving Jackson and Josephine counties in the southern part of the state. Over the past week, we've become the winter wonderland of Oregon and have great skiing at Mount Ashland, so I'd encourage you all to come down and go skiing. Giving each committee member a detailed copy of my remarks as well as some other information. I'll just hit the highlights. Rogue Community College right now, as well as working with our high schools, working with our local four-year universities. We are now working, and we have been in the past, working with our local workforce development groups and So Ready, our Southern Oregon Economic Development Group, for workforce training. We've done a survey of the community businesses and discovered that if we could provide the trained workforce, they would be willing to hire 500 additional people into positions that are above living wage and full benefited jobs. So that's one area that we're working very diligently on right now, is to get together with those businesses to create the type of employees, the type of employee training that they need. One of the problems we run into is obviously the decline in investment, in public investment in community colleges. Over the last, say, 9-10 years, I think all of us in community colleges have seen our tuition go from about, in the $30 per credit hour range to now we're all in the $60 per credit hour range. And so you're seeing a 100% increase in, say, 9 to 10 years. And what's happening then is our students, we're having to cut sections, cut services, and our students are responding with frustration. In some cases, they're not attending community college anymore. In some cases, it takes them longer to achieve their educational goals. We'd like to work, as I mentioned, more with our business partners, more with our high school partners. But at the same time, you know, our costs keep rising. Our investment in community colleges, public investment in community colleges, is declining. And so we're very strained to try to achieve these investment goals that we'd like to achieve. At a funding level of $529 million, Rogue Community College would actually see some investment dollars above where we were in 2004-2005. So that's one thing we're hoping for, because that return on investment, each community college can tell a story of a tremendous return on investment. For example, at Rogue Community College, for each dollar of public investment, we return $3.20 back to the community. I think any of us, if we saw those types of returns on our own personal investments, we'd be putting all the money we possibly could into an investment that for each dollar we put in, we got $3.20 back. So that's what Rogue Community College can do, and obviously the impact of the disinvestment is significant. For example, one thing we would like to do is work with our heavy lift helicopter industry. They've been telling us for a long time they'd like us to develop an airframe and power plant program. We've been doing some work with them through apprenticeship program, but it's not a full-fledged airframe and power plant program. If we could do something like that, we feel we could create a huge economic boost in our community just through the support of that industry. We like to say at Rogue Community College that community is our middle name. We've been working with our healthcare people, Ashland Community Hospital, Asante, Providence. Right now, those three groups are providing $147,000 to us to expand our nursing program, and we were able to expand that from accepting in the mid-20s a number of students, say 20 to 25 per year, to now we're accepting 36 students per year. We're pretty excited about that, but at the same time, we're receiving over 200 applications per year of people who want to be in the nursing program. Right now, as I mentioned, we're working with our local four-year colleges and universities. We have our joint building project going up in downtown Medford. The groundbreaking will be at the end of March, and I'd like to thank the legislature for funding that capital improvement project, and thanking you for your belief in capital improvement programs for all the community colleges. It's something that we really need. We like to say at the community colleges, the reason we're here is because we're the higher education that's closest to our citizens and our students. We have the flexibility, we have the responsiveness, and all of us have success stories from the 38-year-old mother of three who is now on her way to receiving a nursing degree to the homeless young man who is now on his way to a four-year degree. All of us have these success stories, and as I said, community colleges offer the best return on investment of public dollars of really anything. And as Oregonians, hopefully I'm not too loud. As Oregonians, I think we can say the best return and the best impact comes from the dollar, each dollar invested in Oregon's community colleges. And that sums up my remarks, and I appreciate your time and appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you very much for being here. Is there, with regards to the airframe and power plant program that's being promoted, is one of the helicopter manufacturers or one of the or maybe more than one getting involved with that also to help provide some of the staffing, I don't know, and also?
Yeah, they're all involved in a planning process, and there are some that have been working with us on that. We, as I said, we have started an apprenticeship program, so we do have some partnerships there that are working. It's just a situation where businesses can invest, and they have been investing, but it's really something that there needs to be public investment as well as private investment. And the private sector is willing to invest. The public sector needs to be able and willing to invest also.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you very much for coming all the way up here.
All right.
We do appreciate it. Okay, so now we'll go back to the list the way it is. So, President Silverman?
Vice Chair Crumble and all the rest. My name is Robert Silverman. I'm president of Mount Hood Community College. And just a couple of quick observations. First of all, thank you for changing that order. I hate to walk into a room to make a presentation and half the audience leaves. So I do appreciate letting Peter be first. Now, if you leave, I'm going to be really hurt. So,
well, I'm sorry, but I'm the last man standing, so I can't leave.
Oh, good. Good.
But here come the reinforcements now. So,
one way or another, I just really don't ever want to have that situation happen. The second thing is, all I could say to start with is, you know, I mean, I could come and give you somewhat of the same report of all the other presidents that we've heard before and probably the ones to come. So I'd like to sort of avoid that and focus on something else and assure you of my veracity, because I'm probably the only president that has a board member in the room to make sure that I say the right things. So we are trying our best, to be honest and upfront. Our board is spending quite a bit of time right now thinking about the future of the college and the future of where our educational process is going. To their credit, and not just because one's in the room, but to the credit of the whole group, is that
only gonna, what's that? We won't tell him. You're only
going
to give him credit.
It's all he's going here. All over the state, but don't worry about it. But I do want to say that they're visionary, and they want to be visionary, and they want to look at the future. And as we look at the community colleges they stand today, we can always be better. We can always make progress, and we appreciate all the support that you're giving us and the support we hope to get in the future. But we have to look at what is it that we're really about, and what have we been about, and what are we going to be about. And as I look at our college and our discussion, we're focusing on the issue of the students. We have to create value within the community college that may be greater than ever before. We're in a competition to bring students to us, competition with distance education, proprietary schools. There's a lot of competition. If we want people to come to the community college and increase even faster than we are our enrollments, we have to create value in their minds about why they would come. Yeah. It's a tough world right now when Mr. Gates, Mr. Jobs, Mr. Dell, all these people, richest men in the world, really haven't had a lot of higher education. Maybe the world has changed a little bit. Maybe we're competing even with the garage, where guys can go and they can invent something in the garage and sell it for how many ever billion dollars. I mean, it may be a whole different world we're looking at. So the competition's up. The value of higher education is, let's say, maybe different. I hope not, but maybe. So we have to look at what is it that we can increase the value to the consumer, to the students, to attract them more frequently and more available, make it more available. The way I look at it, the way the board is looking at it, is there are three reasons a person chooses a community college: affordability, convenience, and programs. We've talked a lot about excellent programs and the expansion of excellent programs, and they are great programs. Convenience, that's a very interesting one. I do believe that if you have high-quality programs, exceptionally high-quality programs, people will pay for quality, and they will not worry about how much they pay. Now, I don't know that's true, because I also think tuition is a big determinant of whether or not somebody can come to school. But if you have a guaranteed of a job of $60,000 at the end of a three-year program at the community college, people usually find a way to pay the tuition to come. So I think value becomes a very, very important issue. Affordability, we've got to be affordable. And we do know that the increase of tuition over the past few years has reduced our access. So the question that I am talking to our board about, and our board is talking to me about, is how do we increase the value to the students for a higher education? How do we work with businesses, universities, and all the partnerships you've heard described to create more value into our product, which is our educational services to our students? One issue that we talk about, 5 years ago, we decided that knowledge-based education was one thing that we held high, and that is, what does it take to be an educated person and participate in a knowledge-based economy? It's a hard question, but if you look at what those characteristics are, it becomes pretty clear. You know, competence in reading, writing, thinking, critical thinking, technology. Well, in the future, what we're talking about is, what is the next step? After you get all those basic competencies, what does the workforce need in the next century? And now you start talking about what the future may be, and it may be creativity, innovation, some of those things that Mr. Gates and Mr. Jobs and Mr. Dell are using every day. Entrepreneurship, having a business and making it successful. So some way or another, we're in the middle of this discussion. I can't tell you where we're going to be in the end of this discussion. But we do know that value is important. Value is important for the student. Should be important for all of us. What is the value of a higher education? And then we have to put the money into it, and we have to support it, because we really do believe that it's valuable. One example of a program that we have, which is on the ropes, which is child development education, CDE. We have a center that serves 90 students, 90 children. 45 of those children are children of our students who couldn't go to school if they didn't have that service, and we're in jeopardy of closing that building. New national standards, et cetera, have made it probable that we'll have to close in the next few years. We need your support to help that. Anyway, we do need you. I love the earlier question, what can you do for us? How can you help us? Well, we have a long, long list. But I think that we have to be partners in this. We have to be partners in servicing the citizens of Oregon. We have to work together to identify what are those values that we hold dear. What are those skills that are going to make people competitive in the next century? How are we going to stand up to global competition? And the community colleges are the key to it all. And I would thank you for inviting us so we can say these kinds of things, because if you listen to everybody, we're doing what we should be doing. We're doing what's right. We're working to get people jobs and make their lives better. So thank you. And again, thank you for putting Peter first.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Before you go, and I'm not familiar with the bill because it's on the Senate side, and I haven't been paying attention to Senate bills yet. When they get over to our side, then I will. But there's Senate Bill 472. That's a bill that evidently Representative Lim is one of the chief sponsors on, that along with Senator Juana Sanderson, that would give Mount Hood Community College the money to continue the Early Childhood Development Center. I'm going to guess, educated guess, that you're probably in favor of that. Is that?
Yeah, I probably would think so, yes. I would probably. But I do want to keep that in context. That bill was not something that the college sponsored or asked for. That bill was because in the process of coming from the state board to the governor's office to propose budget, Mount Hood got left off the capital list. Two of us were left off. That bill was a response by our legislators that said, well, if they're going to leave it off the capital list and not submit it to the legislature, as it was suggested by the state board, then we will put our own bill in. Now, in both cases, I do believe the two bills, I thought there were really two bills, one in the Senate side and one in the House side.
And there may be.
And that that bill is now interesting because we're also being, we hope Mr. Hunt will put in a bill that will put us back on the capital list. Now, I don't know how all that's going to work out. All I've heard is that that's going to go to Ways and Means. It'll be sorted out. But I would say this, that you can quote me. I support the Child Development Center for Mount Hood Community College. The vehicle by which we get to it, I don't know, but I would hope we get back on the capital list, and then whatever the representative and the senator want to do with their bills is really up to them.
Sure.
Does that help? I mean,
does, and that kind of clarifies from the standpoint of some of the process and where it's gone and that sort of thing. So, I do appreciate your comments about that, and I think, you know, especially where we're looking to expand childhood development training and early childhood education and that sort of thing, it seems counterintuitive to me that we would be looking at closing a program. And does that mean then that it just gets opened up somewhere else? I mean, you've already got it established. Why would we want to close it?
We're really interested, too, that if the governor and the legislators' intent of fully funding or more greatly funding Head Start, there's going to be a lot of need for slots. You can fund a lot of people, but if there's no place to put them, we have a 700-person child waiting list on our center. Wow. So there's a big need out there. And it would be a travesty if the center closed.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Vice Chair,
Derek?
Mr. Chair, just as a clarifying comment, I think the other House bill you're referring to may have been referred to another committee, perhaps the Workforce Committee. So there is, yes, another House bill out there, but it hasn't yet come to the Education Committee.
Okay. So I haven't, Mr. Chair, or I guess I should be addressing you correctly, Mr. Chair. I have not been keeping up with those two bills. Not that I don't support them, but I just haven't been following that closely.
Understand.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's have Rita Cavan. Rita Cavan? There she is. Yes, you are here.
Thank you, Representative. You're welcome.
Yay.
And he's back, so he's...
Now, I'm listening, too, very closely.
Mr. Chair, as you don't know, you were here before me, so you knew I wasn't here in the beginning.
That's
and
right.
I was listening to our mayor's State of the City speech, and I missed Gretchen, the president of Chemeketa, but the mayor mentioned Chemeketa twice in her State of the City speech, so
very good.
For all that's worth.
And you know well about your local college.
Well, could always learn more.
Very good. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Buckley, members of the House Subcommittee on Higher Education, my name is Rita Cavan, and I'm the president of Lynn Benton Community College. Thank you for the opportunity to share information with you today about LBCC. I've left you with three brochures. One is about the degree partnership program. One is our strategic plan that we've worked on with the community that we serve. and the other is Fast Facts About LBCC, and I'd like you to pay particular attention to how many high school students we serve and the fact that we save their families over $690,000 a year in tuition. In terms of student enrollment, we rank 6th out of 17th Oregon Community Colleges, and we serve approximately 23,000 students. That's headcount. Of those, about 5,500 of our students attend full-time. We offer educational programs not only in Lynn and Denton counties, but across the state. Our radiological technology program, for example, has received a federal grant to deliver distance training in a high-demand healthcare profession, allowing students across the state of Oregon to stay connected to their rural community and still prepare for a meaningful health career. Our ag department also provides statewide programs in agriculture, animal technology, horse management, and horticulture. But what I'd really like to talk to you today about are two very special aspects of LBCC: our model degree partnership program, which we call DPP, and our growing investment in science, technology, engineering, math, and healthcare education. Our degree partnership enrollments with OSU continue to increase at an amazing rate, proof that our program is beneficial to Oregon students and their families. In only a few years, the DPP has admitted over 6,000 students. Not only do DPP students save up to $8,000 of the cost of their four-year degree, but their GPA is higher than students who followed a more traditional path and spent their full 4 years at OSU, and they graduate from OSU with an average of 18 fewer units. There are some additional benefits to our degree partnership that I think are often overlooked. Because of the proximity of our campuses, we are able to move students between our two colleges with a loop bus, reducing the strain on parking and commuting. Many OSU students begin their traditional path at OSU, find out about the degree partnership, and enter the program later in their freshman year through the back door. Students in the partnership program, in a way, save face by being OSU students their freshman year, even though they are taking most of their or all of their classes at LBCC, but they still say they're an OSU student, and they are. Our faculty members work closely with one another in fields such as theater, agriculture, business, and engineering, and that work together facilitates seamless articulation for all students. DPP students coming in from rural Oregon can live in the OSU dorms while taking classes at LBCC, which makes it an easier choice for their families. And the transition from one institution to the other happens at the pace determined by the student and can change from one term to another. I'm always amazed at how many students benefit from the DPP. Recently, I went to a bank, and I had to meet with a customer representative, and as soon as he heard I was from LBCC, he said, oh, he'd started at OSU, he'd heard about DPP, he'd entered the program, and he was delighted not only at the cost savings, but the fact that at the end of each term, he received a statement from LBCC telling him that his credits had been automatically forwarded to OSU. He didn't ever have to do anything and stand on the line. His enthusiasm is typical. I'd also like to tell you a little bit about our vision for science, engineering, and health education at LBCC. Let me begin by summarizing some of the recent investments in expanding the capacity of LBCC to provide access to students. Through a combination of a $19 million bond, private contributions, and investment from our general fund, we have recently improved and expanded many of our instructional facilities. We've opened a workforce development center in Lebanon to serve the needs of East Lynn County residents. Our East Lynn Center is poised to serve the new Lowe's Distribution Center and other business and industry partners. In fact, we're already providing management training for Lowe's, even though they haven't opened yet. Our partnership with Samaritan Health Services includes shared facilities with the hospital and an ever-expanding array of health career training options. We're in the beginning stages of developing an advanced technology manufacturing center in Lebanon to serve local industry as part of our strategic plan. We also have expanded and renovated the Benton Center in Corvallis to provide undergraduate education for transfer students, for DPP students, and for ESOL students. In Albany, we've added 22,000 square feet of classroom for the humanities and expanded our nursing skills lab and our business services center. And this fall, we'll be matching a gift of $1.5 million to renovate and expand our tutoring center and library. All of this is set up like dominoes to make way for what we consider to be our most urgent unmet need in terms of capital improvements, and that's in science and health, very similar to stories you've already heard today. We currently, even though we serve 23,000 students, have only 48 lab seats in chemistry and 48 lab seats in biology. Our science labs are required for transfer and graduation. They're required for entrance to health career programs such as nursing. We currently have the capacity, if we book those 48 seats back-to-back, day and night, we can serve about 5,000 science students each year, and we need to serve 8,700. That means we're turning away around 3,000 a year. So in the 3 years I've been president, I'm actually in my fourth year, that's over 10,000 science students that we have turned away from LVCC. These students have very few options. They can drive 50 miles north or 50 miles south and stand in line at another community college, which also needs science labs. They can pay twice as much and take their science requirements at OSU with about 200 other students in the room. They can wait another term and try again, but if they wait too long, they'll lose their financial aid eligibility because their time will run out. The situation has been particularly poignant for over 250 returning veterans who came back to LBC expecting to resume their lives, and we're telling them that they cannot get their science classes. Our phase project will add a chemistry lab building, renovate and double the capacity of our biology labs, and provide faculty offices for an expanded full-time science faculty. The total project will result in approximately 58,000 square feet for science, math, engineering, and health, up from 30,000, so almost doubles our capacity. Excellent. It will double our students' access to science, engineering, and health. We are raising $1 million in private funds. So far, we have about $760,000 of that. We're asking the federal government for an appropriation to help with the cost of lab equipment. We've asked the state of Oregon for $3.75 million, which we will match to build, expand, and renovate our science labs. One of the points that I really like to make today is that the state's investment in capital construction is as much a part of student access to education as the investment in student financial support. If Oregon is truly interested in economic vitality, its future must include an investment in its students to fill positions in science, technology, engineering, and health careers. And I'd like to conclude by reading you a few excerpts from student thank you notes. Our foundation gives students merit need-based scholarships of $750 a term for two terms, or $1,500 a student. And we ask them to send thank you notes back to our donors. And even though this is a state opportunity grant, it does give you a sense of the kind of students that we serve. This money will tremendously help me and my family with paying rent, gas, and purchasing my books and supplies. I am now in my fourth term here at LBCC, and I'm taking another 13 credits. I hold a 3.09 GPA. After my ordeal with losing my house, moving to Mississippi, going through Hurricane Katrina, moving back to Oregon, then getting sick, I am so pleased to say I decided to go back to school. It has opened my eyes to a whole new world. The next one, I cannot express to you what it means to me to be selected to receive this scholarship. It was winter break and I was trying to prepare for the term, looking at my classes, my graduation checklist, and the scholarship application. I couldn't help but be discouraged. There was no way I could pay for my entire tuition spring term. I opened the award letter and there it was. Tears ran down my cheek. I was overwhelmed with feelings of hope. It is now winter term. I'm preparing for graduation. Not only can I pay for my winter and spring term, but I know that hard work and dedication pay off. All I have to do is try. To think that I almost didn't apply because I didn't think that I would get anything now seems ridiculous. The third one. Thank you for the scholarship for winter and spring term. I was the first in my family to graduate from high school, and I am the first to attend college. I became dependent upon myself as a senior in high school. A couple I'd worked for took me in and told me I could do anything I wanted as long as I had an education. I'm now in my second year at Lynn Benton Community College, and with spring term, I'll complete my certificate. The last one, I began my new life at LBCC as a result of my previous high-tech computer job being outsourced to India. I qualified for the Trade Act retraining program and then began researching job markets that I felt qualified for. I found that LBCC had a well-respected diesel program. I've excelled in my training, joined the Diesel Club, and will be taking part of Skills USA contest this winter representing the college. I plan to graduate in summer 07 with a 4.0 and work at a local truck RV repair business. This scholarship will help me purchase the tools I'll need when I start my profession. Lynn Benton College believes it's here to give options to Oregonians, to help them make better choices in their lives, and to give them more options as the job market evolves. And I want to thank you for your support and for having me here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions, gentlemen? Thank you so much for your work. Thank you for coming here today to share with us. I wish we had a longer time. Several of your programs that I would love to delve into. I'm glad that the DPP is working so well. It's one of the most...
It is wonderful.
It's very exciting.
It is tremendous. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Judith Hansen, please. Just to do a little bit of time check, we still have Judith and four other presidents to cover in about 55 minutes. We'll just kind of keep aware of where we are. And welcome, Representative Greenlee. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I'm Judith Hansen, president of Southwestern Oregon Community College, and Chair Buckley, Vice Chair Kummel, Vice Chair Clem, Representative Greenlee, and Mr. Olson. I'm here this afternoon to thank you for this opportunity to share the difference that you make at our community colleges throughout the state, and also to let you know the needs that we have at Southwestern Oregon Community College as we request funding for the next biennium. Shifting sands. Oregon South Coast responds to the shifting sands of environmental and economic change anchor state futures. Sir Francis Drake sailed into our Coos Bay Harbor in the 1500s, foreshadowing the environment-based economies that we all enjoy today. Marine and logging strength followed early Native American and Drake discovery. However, fewer and fewer logging and fishing ships sailed from South Coast ports of Reed's Fort, Winchester Bay, Coos Bay, Bandon, Port Orford, Gold Beach, and Brookings over the last two decades. The story of Southwestern Oregon Community College, founded by longshoreman Henry Hansen, not a relative, in the response to changing economic sands of, although I'd like to be, of Oregon South Coast. Today, our Oregon South Coast communities, from Reed's Port in western Douglas County to south to Brookings on the California line, Bandon, Port Orford, and Gold Beach, and their mountains on the coast, to Powers and the mountains on the east, enjoy renewed economic discovery from wealthy retirees and visionary investors. And the investments range from real estate to business to industry to tourism. Now, the whole world seems to know about Bandon Dunes, the three courses that are ranked in the top 10 in the United States. However, the emerging industrial growth on the South Coast is not as well known. The PowerPoint presentation in your folders summarizes the shifting economic sands of the South Coast, the recovery from economic recession of the last two decades, and our Southwestern Oregon Community College unique programming and partnerships that are key to continued economic growth for our Oregon South Coast. So the unique aspects of Southwestern Oregon Community College District began with, of course, our geography, which invited Sir Francis Drake to anchor in the 16th century, connected our coastal communities to the Pacific Rim, prompted longshoreman Henry Hansen to conceive of our college in the 1950s, provided the largest logging port in America, spurred total economic turnaround in the last 2 years. The new economies that we're looking at right now include emerging international liquid natural gas processing. I know this has been in the papers. Liquid natural gas pipeline, international container freight operation, tourism, and bioenergy industries in the process of locating on the South Coast. Southwestern has a great opportunity to respond to the new industry needs, capturing new fiscal and educational resources for the citizens we serve. Our district launched a new strategic plan initiative just 2 years ago. We started with 50 focus groups and invited a community commission to make recommendations to the Board of Education. And the board forged a new vision statement to begin to guide our response to emerging economies. Southwestern leads and inspires lifelong learning. And now, I know that that sounds pretty encompassing, but in fact, it does guide exactly where we're going, and let me share with you how. Despite the economic excitement of new tourists arriving to surf and golf and to hike and sail, and new industrial developers and related new business opportunities, Southwestern has been challenged to respond to these needs before we have the infrastructure and the money to be able to do so. We have unique educational aspects that of our service that respond to the changing economic needs, and they all involve partnerships because we can't do it alone. Our Newmark Center, our one-stop shop complex at our college entry, houses family-centered child care, adult reentry, and senior volunteer programming, visually expressing our vision of seamless education for our students from birth to career. Our 400-bed residence halls provide access to education for students throughout our district that is marked by transportation difficulties, even though it's a beautiful topography on the coast. And our business development center incubator has been open for 10 years, has started 28 new businesses now on the streets of our South Coast communities. New Oregon Coast Culinary Institute and International Chef Exchanges co-located a fire station with Coos Bay Fire Department's anticipated single-parent housing with the help of Jordan Cove, expanded welding with the help of Sauce Brothers and American Bridge, and plans for a new health and sciences technology building. Turf management and golf teams with the help of Bandon Dunes. We wouldn't have missed that. Reserve police officer training programs in response to new security needs of our port and airport, but also to help with layoffs due to loss of ONC funds. And an expanded construction programming that we're doing in collaboration with our North Bend School District, our Coos Bay School District, and business partners. We have international sister colleges in South Korea, China, and Brazil with whom we have exchanges and provide opportunities for Pacific Rim understanding. We have a collaborative program with South SLU National Estuary and University of Oregon Institute of Marine Biology. And we're starting our alternative energy programming to anticipate the new wave generation station that's right off the coast of Reedsport and new industrial bioenergy growth. For the last 7 years, we've enjoyed a university center that houses six different university programs. At our graduation, we graduate not only GED and associate degree and have a nursing pinning, but we have baccalaureate degrees, master's degrees, and doctoral degrees that come across our stage, creating an opportunity for our students to see what they can do on the South Coast because we are so rural and so remote. So our futures follow the futures we envision for Oregon. Our Board of Education has just approved a district-wide master plan that will encompass the growth for workforce that we're envisioning. Funding approved in 2005 by the Oregon legislature allowed for matched dollars, $2.3 million, to match dollars already in the bank from Curry County citizens. They've been waiting for a Curry County campus. In your PowerPoint presentation, you'll see what the little hovels look like in Curry County to serve the citizens of Curry County. They're ready. Borax, now Rio Tinto, has donated land on 101 for that campus, and we're going to put a shovel in the ground coming up in the next couple of months. And we thank you for that opportunity. It's going to make a difference for the citizens of the South Coast. We are anticipating a new health and sciences technology building in collaboration with Bay Area Hospital, but they can't pay for all of it. You've heard the stories of the cost of the rise of education. We can't put it on the students' back. And we'll be looking to the legislature in another biennium, not this one, for capital funding. And we're hoping that that is something that you will continue to make a part of our priority, because are not only our eroding infrastructure, but also our increasing needs for economic development are lie directly on the shoulders of our community colleges and our communities. And we have expanded Family Summit Center program that we hope to will include a cooperative single-parent housing opportunity. We have a big methamphetamine problem on the South Coast, and one of the results of meth is that families do not have a parent, and then they don't have the housing, and then they don't have the money, and we're thinking that we can be the solution for that meth problem right at Southwestern Oregon Community College. So we enjoy the support of our communities we serve, and therefore we enjoy service learning in our curriculum. It's sponsored by a Campus Compact for Service Learning, both in Oregon as well as nationally. And we thank you for providing the leadership for civic engagement that models that very value that we treasure. Questions?
Thank you, Dr. Anderson. Any questions? Representative Greenlee.
You mentioned the ONC situation, and we know Coos and Curry County right at the moment are in huge financial problems.
Yeah, we've already made some.
Is that going to affect you in some significant way?
It will affect.
Will affect the community college.
The turnaround on dollars invested by our taxpayers at Southwestern Oregon Community College is 4.2 times, based on the most recent statewide economic impact evaluation. So if you reduce the ONC funds by approximately $5 million in the county, you can multiply what the effect will be the other way around, if that makes sense. On the college, it means dollars we will not be getting and people who will not be enrolling. We are in economic recovery, and in fact there's probably an opportunity for new employment for those individuals, but there's a gap, and we'll be laying off individuals who will not be able to be hired as longshoremen or security officers or construction workers or welders until they go to school and until those corporations come to the South Coast in another 2 years. It's a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Frank Toda, please. I just wish you presidents were a little bit prouder of your institutions.
Oh,
well, I was going to borrow it. Chair Buckley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Frank Hoda. I'm president of Columbia Gorge Community College. My college district is located on the Columbia River between Portland and a place out there in the Blue Mountains. 10,000 square miles is our service area of the district, five counties. I like to refer to them as 5,500 dreams and futures each year we touch in terms of students. And it's very significant when you consider that in 2004 we had the documented highest unemployment in the nation. And our vision that we developed at that very dark time was we're about building dreams and transforming lives. And by focusing on investment, critical investment in the infrastructure and in the education of our rural community, we've focused this investment in three areas. And the handout materials you have focuses on one of those, which was health care. The second area is renewable energy training, and the third area is pathways. And I'll be very brief. I'll address the three areas in terms of some of the particulars. Healthcare training. 5 years ago, we did not have a nursing program. Nursing care in our rural area was very inadequate because of the inability to get trained nurses and healthcare professionals that would stay in a rural setting. 5 years ago, we made the decision that we had no other opportunity but to move forward with some type of training program. And so last week, we received our 8-year certification as Oregon's newest RN training program.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was very exciting, created a lot of excitement in the community in terms of job training. We're a small region. We only have 24 students in cycle at any point in time. But at any point in time, we also have around 80 to 90 on the wait list to get in. It is a program that puts people to work in family wage jobs, and there is a long list of folks that would like those jobs. Recently, 6 months ago, I would say that we did not have a renewable energy training program. 6 months ago, if you had mentioned renewable energy to me, I would have said, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Let's keep focused on healthcare. But what we found is that a lot of the things we do in healthcare in terms of technology are the types of things that are necessary for renewable energy training. And so I'm happy to say that right now, 6 months later, we are the only wind energy training center on the West Coast, and we currently have partnerships with five of the major industries that are moving into the area. What we've discovered within the last year, there are 16 operating wind energy farms around the location of the Columbia Gorge, and there are 26 currently programmed for operation. They are predicting 300 to 500 additional jobs that will need technicians, and they have come to us and asked us to put together these training programs, which we are gladly moving forward in that process. Finally, pathways. 5 years ago, if you had mentioned pathways, the same thing. You would probably got a blank stare. But today, we have put pathways on our radar screen in terms of what we want to do in terms of tracking people from where they are to family wage jobs. And one of the focus areas is our high school students. Dropout rate near 40%. Totally unacceptable in terms of investment in the community. We have worked very hard with our K-12 partners, and today we have over 400 students that are not only enrolled at the high school, but are enrolled at our college. And we are currently graduating students both from the high school and the college at the same time. Last year I had the opportunity of congratulating some students that had received their high school diploma and then the next week later walked across the stage to receive their college diploma. That program, that dual enrollment program, was highlighted in a white paper that was presented to the state board. Again, it's the essence of working together. It's the essence of collaboration. It's the same thing that put us on the road map in terms of our healthcare program, more recently our wind energy program, and now, again, we're focusing on pathways. I might also mention the healthcare training program was recently recognized as a national model for rural healthcare, and so one of the things that we find ourselves doing is flying people around to give presentations about how you can develop a rural healthcare training program that functions and provides opportunities for the people in your community. So what's the return on the investment? The return on the investment is about $4.30 for every dollar invested in the activities. We recently had a statewide research project that looked at those dollars in terms of our investment and returns. Return on investment, the ROI is about 18%. If you look at what you're getting in terms of your stocks and bonds, which is about 7%, or the current prime rate, which is about 4%, 18% return on investment is pretty good. And so we're pretty excited about what the community college does for the region. Ultimately, it's about jobs, family wage jobs, and it's about putting people back to work. It's about transforming lives. We've heard some stories today, and I've got a whole box full of but for the time, I won't share them. If you've ever looked in the eyes of one of these students that have had the opportunity to go from where they are to a new job, and right now I'm having this vision of a nursing student that was a single mother on welfare, the day I got to see her walk across the stage, and she now is an employed RN at a local hospital, it motivates significantly. In summary, it really is about people. It's about communities. It truly is about building dreams and transforming lives. And if you were to ask me, why am I sitting here talking to you about dreams and transformation, I would say that the State Board request for $529 million will help me push that dream even further for a large section of rural America. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Any questions? Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the what's the status of different facilities in terms of, you know, you've got quite a district there, so where are different things located?
We have a lot of what I call outreach facilities where we have worked with partners and we actually provide training opportunities. We have a thing called Mid-Columbia Council of Governments. And they provide a space in some of their facilities. I've lost count of the number of little outreach activities that we have. We've invested very heavily in distance. We call it convenience learning. 5 years ago, we had no distance learning. Today, about 30% of my programs are on distance learning. And the reason being is even if you're taking classes in the local region, right next to the campus, through distance learning, it provides the opportunity to take the class at a time convenient to you. Mm-hmm. So as a working person, it allows you to do that. One of the things that we've invested in is a new campus in the Hood River County area. One of the things that happened last year is the legislature passed a capital construction bond and gave us $7.5 million. We have leveraged that into $27 million, and as a result, we're building two new campuses, one at our main campus in Adels and a separate standalone campus in Hood River. Again, it all goes to investment, drives results. It's a perfect example of that $4.30. You give me a dollar, and I'll spin it into four. So, again, long answer to your question, but... one of the things you'll find all community colleges do is outreach and focus on flexibility and agility. You'll find our training sessions in all manner of buildings and facilities, from morgues and old bars to old hospital facilities.
Well, Mr. Chair.
I recalled the vote in the Hood River County area. I spent a few months a year there on an orchard, my wife's side of the family, and I remember reading in the papers, you know, are we going to get a campus if we vote for this? And so, we are, and I think that's wonderful. Plus, not that my mother-in-law doesn't like coming to the Dalles, but she goes to the canning kitchen and cans some of the commercial canning kitchen, and she brings her cherries and things and works there, and so maybe it'll cut her commute time down a little bit if there's something like that. But she loves the facility and often talks about how even if they don't ever build in Hood River, that was enough for her her vote to last a lifetime.
It was a very significant event to see two counties that traditionally were not on the same page get together to support community college education. And again, the message you're hearing today is it's about investment and collaboration and the excitement the community colleges bring to the table in terms of learning opportunities that lead to jobs. And so I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to speak to you. I'm a little nervous, which I'm trying to figure out why, but I really wanted to make sure that you heard this message that I wanted to carry, which is it's about investment, it's about people, it's about making a difference.
Mr. Olson makes people nervous. Usually, it's
just is that it?
Yeah. Yes. Can't be try to get him pulled back.
Yeah,
Dr. Can I ask you about tuition? Are you looking at another increase in the coming year, or are you going to be able to hold it steady?
Sir, I'm glad you asked that question. The short answer is no. We have every year raised our tuition as a result of the cutbacks in funding. We started out at $33 per credit. And in my history, we are currently at 65, and we're starting to hurt the ability of students to be able to come to the college. I've seen it in terms of the anguish on the people that I work with, and so we've made the conscious decision that we're holding the line at 65. We'll find the other revenue I've hired a resource development person, and we're going after grants. We're pursuing alternative partnerships. We've worked very closely with a new company called Google, who has just committed to give us $1.5 million over the next 10 years to fund technology training. So there is funding out there, but again, I don't want to discount the need for the $529 million that we've got in the budget requested by the state board. That funding will help us continue to drive. I speak for many of my fellow presidents, we have gone out on a limb in terms of investing in our communities. A lot of times you make decisions that on paper don't always make sense, and one of them, for example, is health care. If you look at the cost of health care, you wouldn't normally invest in health care, but you'll find that every one of my fellow presidents have a heart and a passion for the communities and will do things for our communities that don't necessarily make sense on paper.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry about that.
That's very good
responses.
He's triggered enough that you had a person, I don't know if it was your financial aid officer or someone in the office, but she came in to testify from the Dallas campus at the Student Assistance Commission budget hearings 3 or 4 years ago. And I remember her saying, you know, I was nervous about coming in. I didn't know if you would even really listen or if it was worth the drive. Well, her efforts and other community college campus hearings led to essentially a public record that talked the last legislature, and I wasn't here for this, into funding the part-time program for college students, which obviously helped a lot of community college students. But I remember it was our first one, and she was there. She made this comment about whether it was worth it, so you could at least let her know if you can figure out who it was.
It was Karen Carter.
Yeah, that's right. It's fantastic.
She was very passionate about supporting the students because that's the other piece of this equation. We can invest in infrastructure and programs, but if you don't have the support from the students, it makes it very, very difficult. And so that has been a huge support to our programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your work, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead and call
in. I was going to ask the next president to come forward. Mary, is it Spill Day? Thank you very much. Representative Greenlee.
Yeah, I just like to comment. It was really intriguing
if I can interrupt just a second. The buzz is cell phones. If you have your cell phone on, even if it's not ringing, it can buzz the system. So if you'd be so kind. Representative, I'm sorry for the interruption.
I was intrigued to hear President Toda talk about family wage jobs, and I mean that's obviously an answer. We think of higher education, we think of professions, we think about a variety of things, but what these folks are about that are really so important is getting folks to work, and that in this state is really critical because the change in economic structure has ended up with jobs moving down the ladder rather than up the ladder. And this kind of orientation is a very important orientation.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mary Spilde, president of Lane Community College in Eugene, and I'm very pleased to be able to share with you some information about our college. Lane's vision statement is transforming lives through learning, and we really believe that that's what we're about, and we see it every single day when we watch our students come to the college to really transform their lives. Our mission statement, we have a comprehensive mission, and we're working very, very hard to hang on to that mission. But as you will see in a little bit, it's becoming increasingly difficult to do so. We are guided by 7 core values, learning, diversity, collaboration and partnership, innovation, integrity, accessibility, and sustainability. And I would say that we're doing very well in living out those values every single day. But I do believe that we're failing in the value of accessibility, and that's to do with increases in tuition, and it's also to do with elimination of programs and services that we can no longer afford to offer to our community. Lane has been engaged for the last few years in a great deal of strategic planning that guides our work around transforming students' lives, which is the most important thing, but also transforming our college organization and changing the way we do our work to better serve our community, and also transforming the learning environment, learning from what we know about learning, about how the brain works, and changing what we do in the classroom and with all of our services to make sure that we're doing the very best job to help students learn. because that's really what we care about, placing students and their learning at the heart of what we do. Lane is a member of the board of the League for Innovation and Community Colleges. These are 19 community colleges nationally that are known for being innovative in how we do our work. And 4 years ago, we were one of 12 colleges nationally to be selected to be a Vanguard College. And the whole purpose of that project was to really engage the whole campus in thinking about what would our college look like if we really placed learning at the heart of what we do. How would it affect our decision making? How would it affect the way we view our work? So whether you're a custodian or a groundskeeper or a support staff person or a faculty member, you really understood the connection you have to student learning and that student success. And we really tried to make all of our decisions through that lens of thinking about the impact on students. And that led us to develop a set of 9 learning principles that, again, guides our work. And I think particularly important in that list is the idea of committing to a culture of assessment, really looking at how we do our work, assessing if we're being effective, and then making changes if we're not being as effective as we want so that we can really be accountable to our taxpayers and our community in the way we do our work. We've had, like our sister colleges, a number of budget challenges. From 1995 to 2001, we cut at least $1 million per year. I joined the college in 1995, so I hope this is not to do anything to do with my karma. But $1 million a year. From 2002 to 2006, we've cut $14 million, programs, services, and choices for students. And this year, at the governor's budget level, we will cut close to another $5 million.
What's the total budget those cuts are from?
$82 million. We have been committed to a full-time faculty. In fact, I think particularly in the larger colleges, we have the best full-time-part-time ratio in the state. We've been committed to small classes so that students get the personal attention that they need. And again, I think at least among the larger colleges, we have the best faculty to student ratio. We've been committed to a broad range of programs to meet the needs of our students, and we've been committed to trying to keep up with competitive salary and benefits, but we simply can't do it. Family wage jobs will be leaving Lane Community College. We retrenched 37 positions last year, and we'll see more of the same in this coming year. We'll have to have more part-time faculty, and undoubtedly there will be fewer instructional choices for our students and for our community. In spite of all that, I think it's a testimony to our faculty and staff that even with all of these budget challenges, we are engaged in a number of very, very important initiatives that I think are making a very big difference in our community. I just want to briefly talk about them. First, our K-12 initiative. We're very engaged with our 16 school districts, particularly around career pathways and our regional technical education consortium. So many of the high schools have eliminated their vocational programs because they're so expensive. And what we've done is partner with them to assure that any student in Lane County who is interested in vocational education can have access to it, either at Lane Community College or at one of the high schools who continue to have some vocational programs. It's a wonderful partnership with apprenticeship, the business community, and the schools. And we've been helped with money from Career Pathways to make that happen. We're growing our College Now program to allow students to take college credit in high school. We're also doing college placement testing in the high school so that students can find out if they need remediation and can take care of it while they're in high school instead of waiting until they show up at college to find out that they need to improve their math or their reading. We're expanding access to our nursing program through partnerships with Peace Health and Mackenzie Willamette. And we just received a $1.9 million Department of Labor grant to expand our dental hygiene program. I think we're one of 3 in the state, and we will be working with Umpqua Community College, Lynn Benton Community College, to expand that program. It's a very, very expensive program. I think even exceeds nursing. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for other colleges to start that program because of the expense, but through partnership, we can really meet that workforce shortage in dental hygiene. Similarly, we are committed to regional partnerships with other colleges when we don't have a program that our community needs. Instead of us having to start it from scratch, we can, for example, partner with Portland Community College for medical technologists or Lynn Benton Community College for rad techs. And I think one of the really important things that has happened among our community colleges is really looking at the whole state and working regionally together to meet the needs of the state. We're very committed to sustainability. Lane has won 5 awards this year, 2 of them national awards for our efforts in sustainability. We've had an energy management program at Lane, a renewable resource technician for 15 years. It's actually funded by our local utility, and we turn out graduates to work in energy conservation and alternative energy. Operationally, we're committed to recycling. We really practice what we preach. We reuse or recycle 64% of everything that comes into the college, and our goal is to recycle or reuse 100%. And last year, we saved about $60,000 just with our recycling effort. We're also committed to alternative energy. We use wind power. We have photovoltaic. And our chemistry students even took all of our oil from our food services, turned it into biodiesel, and we used that as energy for the campus for 1 month. Now, admittedly, it was September, but nevertheless, a great start with our students. And then finally, a focus on student success. Our Fired Up project, our first year experience, really trying to work with students to retain them and help them move through the college and make that transition from high school to college in a seamless way. And our on-course initiative to help students stay on course and finish on time. And finally, I just want to say that I think the best way to know our college is through our students' eyes and voices, and just want to share some of the voices of our students. First, Jeremy Reel, who said, "Lane's impact on my life has been incredible." Jeremy went to a small non-accredited high school, so did not have a high school diploma, came to Lane, was quickly a member of our Honor Society, was our student body president, transferred to University of Oregon, where he's finishing up his bachelor's degree. He's now applying for law schools, and he's actually working for Representative Barnhart here at the legislature right now. Lillian Palmer, who said Lane is phenomenal. She had worked for 42 years running a ceramic doll studio and retired and decided she still needed to work. She came to our Women in Transition program, completed her associate's degree, and went through graduation at age 75 and is now off to work as an instructional assistant in the local school district teaching reading to needy kids. Kent Glazier, who was in our College Now program, he saved $1,500 in college expenses by taking classes in high school. And by doing that, it allows him to take fewer classes in college so that he can work, so that he doesn't have to incur as much debt. And finally, I'll just mention Alex San Pedro. Alex was a young man who was living on the streets of San Francisco when he was 15 and somehow found his way to Lane Community College. And when we asked him, "What does transforming lives through learning mean to you?" he said, "Transforming lives through learning is Alex San Pedro." Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, he was struggling with alcoholism, depression, and, as he said, life. And then he found Lane. He knows what he's going to do, and he said he was going to take it all the way, get a master's in fine arts, and teach kids. And indeed, that's what he's doing. He was a recipient of the Jack Kent Cook Scholarship, a $30,000 scholarship, which took him to Pratt, the Pratt Institute in New York, where he has graduated with his bachelor's degree, and he has just started his Master of Fine Arts program. So I think that you can see that we give so much hope to so many Oregonians, but we do need your help to stop the disinvestment. We ask for your support of the 529 requests from the State Board of Education, which will allow students like Alex and Kent and Jeremy to fulfill their dreams. And I think you'll agree that Oregonians and our students deserve no less than that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your work. Thank you for taking time to be here with us today.
Thank you.
Blaine Neeson.
Chairman Buckley and members of the subcommittee, my name is Blaine Misson. I'm the president of Umpqua Community College, and it's a pleasure to be with you today to provide you some background about our college, the district that we serve, and some of our needs. First, let me provide you with a little context with regards to our district. Douglas County is classified as an isolated, rural, and economically distressed area. The need for services is high. 25.6% of local families live in poverty. The unemployment rate in Douglas County is 8.2%. For families with children younger than 18 years of age, the poverty rate for Douglas County is 1.5 points higher than the state entire poverty rate. That translates into a poverty rate for that population of 19% children with families. Douglas County's graduation rate for post-secondary education at the baccalaureate degree level or higher is nearly half that of the state's rate. Douglas County is significantly affected by the fact that 87% of its residents have not completed a baccalaureate degree. Furthermore, the rate of those without a high school diploma is 4 points higher than the state's average. The National Institute of Literacy estimates that 47% of Douglas County adults 16 years of age or older lack sufficient foundation and basic literacy skills necessary to adequately function in society. And finally, the potential ending of ONC funds, safety net funds, will mean a drastic impact to Douglas County by some estimated $40 million or more. As you can see, the needs of our district are diverse and plentiful. UCC was founded in 1964 and has proudly served the needs of Douglas County, providing educational programs and adult basic skills, career technical programs, and transfer programs. Over the course of our 40-year history, we've served over 130,000 students, and currently we serve approximately 15,600 students and generate approximately 3,400 FTE a year, making us a mid-sized community college for Oregon standards. I'm pleased to share with the committee a copy of our annual report, which outlines our strategic goals and accomplishments for this past year. This is a report that we produce annually and share with our community. It's sort of an opportunity to share what we've done on behalf of our community. One of the things that we are most proud of is our efforts in working with our community to get people trained and back to work. This hasn't been an easy road, given our funding situation in Oregon, and especially the funding at Umpqua Community College, historically the lowest funded community college in the state of Oregon. Just so you understand the funding challenges at UCC, I want to provide you with a handout that charts our total increased tax revenues over the last 5 years, contrasted just with our costs. Personnel cost increase, and I think that's included in your packet. And it's pretty dramatic, and I think it really drives the point home. Our total tax revenue from the state as well as the local taxes total over 5 years is $814,000. Our personnel costs have gone up over $2 million during that same period of time. So it's pretty dramatic in terms of the gap. Clearly, the driver in our increased personnel costs have been PERS and insurance, as our faculty and staff have received no increase in COLAs for the last 2 years. And hence, that may be the reason we now have unions at Umpqua Community College. Obviously, $814,000 increase in tax support over 5 years is woefully inadequate to support a $20 million institution, so the gap in our funding has been the primary responsibility of our students.
Mr. Chair,
was I
was just pondering the statement about unions. As a person who started the part-time faculty AFT union at Portland State, your statement may have been a slight oversimplification of why the employees of your institution were interested in exercising their rights to organize.
I think it was a main driver that they had not received any COLAs for the last 2 years, and that their wages lag behind other community colleges.
Yeah, the latter maybe more than
okay.
In the former. But there may also have been other things involved.
Oh, most certainly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Additionally, we've economized our operations by eliminating programs, and a recent study indicates that we have nearly 30% fewer administrators on our campus as compared to other similar-sized Oregon community colleges. Our tuition, as I stated, has helped to fill in the gap between our, in terms of our lack of funding. Our tuition has increased 59% over the same five-year period. Now you have the financial context in which we operate. Let me share with you some of the things that we've accomplished in spite of the funding dilemma that we've faced, due in large part to the partnerships with industry and the community support and ability to access grants. We've developed new instructional programs, 8 in fact, in the past 2 years, and have requested approval for 3 additional programs this fall. These programs are aimed at getting Oregonians, residents of Douglas County, back to work. These programs include such options as construction technology, truck driving, paralegal, culinary arts, and our partnership with Lane Community College in terms of dental hygiene. The Cow Creek Tribe of the Umpqua Band of Indians has been one of our top supporters, providing us with a former drive-in theater complex and a diesel shop to house some of these programs. We simply didn't have any college facilities that we could use for expansion of programs at our institution. Many, many other community partners have stepped forward to assist the college so that we can provide these much-needed training programs and get people back to work. In recent years, we have increased our nursing program from 90 students to 126, a 40% increase in that program alone. We've done that through our partnerships with the community, by working with community partners such as the Ford Family Foundation, Ronnie Bruce, a wonderful contributor, the Crane Creek Foundation, and various other grants to pay for a simulation lab, which provides some of our clinical instruction as well as other program expansion costs. We've also worked closely with our 4-year institutional partners to form articulation agreements and co-admission agreements so that our transfer students experience seamless transfer function. Those partners include OHSU, OSU, Eastern Oregon, and Northwest Christian College, and we're currently in the works with other 4-year partners to do similar activities. With the redevelopment of our automotive program, we've seen enrollments grow from just 30 students a couple years ago to nearly 70 this fall. We will launch a retooled welding program this next fall that will meet industry skill expectations, those being the American Welding Society standards. In the future, we will continue to work with our local communities to help grow a healthy economy, provide opportunities for individuals to work and learn so that they can realize their goals. We are currently working with the Umpqua Wine Growers Association, determining how the college might be able to support that industry. And we are working on a plan to respond to regional health care needs by establishing programs that respond to that industry. You may know that we have requested capital funding for a regional health occupations training facility that will also include a science portion for that effort. While we are proud of these accomplishments and we look forward to how we may continue to make a difference in our community and contribute to the economy of Oregon, we recognize that we can only continue to move forward and with increased support from the state. Oregon needs to ensure that we have a strong system of community colleges, that we respond to local needs, that we help the economy grow, and provide opportunities for all Oregonians to have a better life. We've worked hard to do what we can to respond to the needs of our communities, and now we have to look to the legislature for their hard work in helping to solve some of our funding issues. Also included in your packet is a resolution that was passed this last Monday from the Roseburg City Council endorsing and encouraging support of the funding request on behalf of Oregon Community Colleges. And last week, the Roseburg Chamber of Commerce endorsed a similar measure. And they recognized that perhaps their taxes would go up in terms of corporate minimum tax by endorsing it, but felt strongly enough about doing that. In addition to that, we expect endorsements from the county commissioners, the cities of Winston, Myrtle Creek, and Sutherland. Oregonians want their community colleges. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your work.
You bet.
A few questions, Mr. Chair.
We have about a few minutes left, and we have one more question. So you might be able to follow up with him after the hearing if you'd like, Representative.
Sure.
we have one more president, James Middleton from Central Oregon Community College.
Chair Buckley, committee members, for the record, I'm Jim Middleton, president of Central Oregon Community College. Thank you for the opportunity. Firstly, I'd like to express my pride in being part of the rich mosaic of quality that you've had displayed. What I think you've had a chance to see is how your colleges, our colleges in this state, do a fishes and loaves miracle every day of the year.
That's a good way to transform lives.
I'd like to speak real quickly to the myth of Central Oregon, which dominates many discussions. First, that we are the outdoor playground of the Northwest. That is entirely true. Secondly, we're the affluent area flooded with California-rich refugees. That is true to some extent, but only to a very small extent. We've seen amazing growth in Bend. Number one in home cost appreciation in the country this last year. Top 10 up-and-coming innovative communities, Wall Street Journal. Number 17 in the country, Best Cities for Doing Business, Inc. magazine. Number 2 in America in Best Performing Cities for Creating and Retaining Jobs, Milken Institute. But there's much more to the Central Oregon story. We are not Bend Community College. We're Central Oregon Community College. Our district, like some of the others you've heard, is huge. 10,000 square miles, one-tenth of the entire land mass of the state, larger than 8 states. In the midst of some wealth, we have students living in their cars to get their education. Many of our potential students live more than 1 hour away from the campus, and on a day like today, it's much more than an hour, or they don't even get there. Cook and Jefferson counties are among the lowest in the state in the percentage of residents with high school degrees and the percentage of residents with a baccalaureate degree, less than half the rate you'll find in Multnomah, Polk, and Benton counties. While Deschutes County income is 5% above the state average, Crook and Jefferson counties are 20% below the average. Tragically, due to the funding cuts in 2001 and 2, the satellite campuses of Central Oregon Community College in Madras, Prineville, La Pine, Warm Springs, and Sisters were closed. They remain closed today. Central Oregon has grown dramatically. Our enrollment has declined 10% in the last 3 years. We are not meeting the existing needs, and particularly the needs that we see in the outlying areas. The reality is, prior to the governor's proposed budget, our public resources were projected to be virtually frozen for a 7-year period. The higher state ask that has been presented is critical to serve the existing and rapidly expanding needs. These are challenges, but we haven't merely stood still nor merely complained. We've made great strides. COCC has a unique relationship with the state's only branch campus of the university, OSU Cascades campus, which resides on the community college campus. In partnership with the Cascades campus, we're able to provide a baccalaureate degree at one-third less than what it costs if you go to one of the central campuses. If it were not for this partnership, Bend would be the largest community in the country without a university within 100 miles. We have formed the Central Oregon Regional Education Consortium, where we meet two to three times a month with our K-12 university, City of Bend, and employees to look at issues of new program integration of curriculum and economic development. One of our results has been that the number of high school graduates taking college courses in the last 2 years has increased 88%. We're on track this year of an additional 16% increase. Secondly, in partnership with the city, we have proposed to the governor assistance in trying to expand a regional research center by providing free land, free buildings, and startup costs to provide leadership in renewable energy. We've started the state's first composites technology training program, with the labs being supported in the businesses rather than on the campus. And we, like Lynn Benton, have formalized partnerships with, we like Lane have formed partnerships with Lynn Benton for distance delivery of the radiologic tech program, and are working with PCC to develop a medical lab training program also. In the past, we've received a federal grant that helped initiate a distance education nursing program for the small rural Eastern Oregon communities to train incumbent workers who live in their communities. In the summer of 2004, 19 students entered that program. In 2 years, 90% graduated. 100% of them passed their board exams. 88% of them are working as RNs, the other 10% as licensed practical nurses. And 88% of those RN graduates stayed in their rural communities. But the current fiscal challenges are making it very, very difficult for us to roll this out as a long-range program after the pilot project has ended with federal funding. We are poised to construct a $20 million health and sciences center critical to local economic vitality with the help of the community college construction funds. But we're not just looking to the state. Other construction for a campus center, a culinary center, and an innovative 55 and older retirement community to be built on the campus are being pushed through college savings, local donations, and public-private partnerships. Our community members are doing their part. This weekend, they will step up as they have for the last several decades, and I anticipate will donate over $250,000 in scholarship funds in 2 evenings. At the $529 million level, we can begin to address the unmet needs in our outlying communities. We believe we can implement that nursing rural education program. Our board will very strongly at that level consider a tuition freeze. And we're also looking at developing a rural version of PCC's very successful Gateway program, our own new name of a Step Up to College program, which will focus on high school dropouts in the area. We have a 57-year heritage of creating vitality and serving our 10,000 square miles, and we look forward to your help in making this heritage a continuing reality. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Questions?
Yeah, two things I was interested in. One was this 55 and over, did you say college center? Or
we are looking, we are blessed with, from past investment, of having 200 acres, of which we are using about 50 to 60 acres at this time. So we are in negotiation of the possibility of bringing a 55 and older retirement community onto the campus. Mm. We will then integrate those individuals as volunteers on the campus, as students on the campus, and hopefully donors to the campus. We believe that we will be the highlight of the twilight of their lives.
Oh, great slogan. There you go.
The other one, did you say it was in the biofuels or bioenergy that you had made available or are making available space?
The governor's budget includes the BEST program, Bioengineering and Sustainable Technology program, with funds for several of the universities. We do not want to compete whatsoever with those allocations, but as with the Anami Center started as a virtual center with no location. We believe that such a program in sustainability can be enhanced by having a physical home. The city of Bend has offered the land, construction of the facility, and startup costs if that research center would have its home, its coordinating home, at a city location that they've donated.
So that's from the city of Bend?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
But that is it really has grown through the weekly, almost weekly conversation that we have with our consortium group.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your work. Thank you for being here. Thanks to all the presidents for being here today. Please, I think as I mentioned over at your meeting at the conference center, please do the great job like you did last session in making sure the community colleges stay in front of each representative's face. The floor letters are great. Continue your advocacy, and thank you for your work. Close this hearing, Subcommittee on Higher Education.